Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otter. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Sarah Dorr. Sarah is a CEO, business owner, researcher, author of two business books, speaker, thought leader, and future of work expert. She is Group CEO of the CFO Center and the Liberty Group, the global number one provider of part-time and fractional C-suite professionals across finance, people, technology, marketing, and sales, operating in 17 countries. Sarah's business came out of her own realization in her 30s that a traditional corporate career was not for her. She set herself up as a fractional finance director and built a portfolio career long before the words fractional or portfolio career or freedom were ever even used to describe work. The model Sarah has developed with her business partner has helped thousands of professionals worldwide build successful portfolio careers as an alternative to the traditional employment model. Sarah says, C-suite professionals are searching for more purpose and meaning in and at work, with freedom, flexibility, variety, and control being top of their agendas. They feel overworked and disillusioned with the unrealistic demands of their corporate roles. This was the case before COVID, but the pandemic has turbocharged those feelings, resulting in them leaving those roles and looking for alternatives. A new way of working is called for. Sarah Dorr, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Wow, thanks very much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Lovely. So your quote about C-suite professionals seeking more purpose and meaning is so clarifying, and I'm sure many listeners can relate, but that's only part of the equation because your model also helps small businesses access C-suite talent without having them on the payroll. And you talk about this in terms of the access economy as the Spotify for business. Talk about how this is win-win, both for businesses and for professionals.
Yes, and it absolutely is win-win. So those entrepreneurial, particularly those entrepreneurial businesses that are growing, so normally owner managed, they are recognizing that they need C-suite skills. There's no doubt about it. They need to bring people in that can get them to big. Most of them want to get to big. And yet they haven't got the wherewithal to finance that. And actually, they don't need it full time. So the model works really, really well because firstly, it brings those skills to scale to those SME growing businesses who don't need and can't afford full time. And it enables them to have access to the skills for the amounts of time that they need. So it could be one day a week, it could be 2 days a month, it could be 3 days a month or 2 days a week. And it also works for the C-suite professionals, as I started out, you know, many years ago, as did others, in terms of they can build a portfolio of businesses to work with. So they might work with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 businesses, depending on how much time across their week they want to work. They might work full time, but what they would do is bring flexibility to that. So they're in control of their agenda. So if they need to have Wednesday afternoon off, work a weekend instead, they can do that. Or they might even work less amount during the week, depending on, you know, what their life goals are.
That's really interesting. Now, Sara, you were one of my interviewees for We Need New Leaders. And during that conversation that we had, you pointed out that the demographics of people seeking portfolio careers is changing. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So originally when we first started, and this is almost 25 years ago now, I was the outlier. I mean, I was in my 30s and I was a mum of young children at the time, but I was definitely the outlier. The main demographic attracted to this access economy model was older individuals. So, you know, individuals who have had the big roles, they've paid off the mortgage, the kids have left home, and yet they don't want to retire. They're not ready for retirement, even though that might be on the horizon in the distance. And they don't want that big job again. So they had the financial runway to be able to afford to build their portfolio, because there is a build phase where it takes a bit of time to onboard these clients 1 day a week, 2 days a month, before you get to the point where you're as full as you want to be. So that was the demographic to start with. And yet it has changed. So over the years, what I'm seeing is more and more individuals entering the portfolio fractional world of work at the C-suite level at a younger age, basically. They're choosing portfolio instead of the corporate roles. And they want to have more variety. They want to work with different businesses. They want to craft and build a portfolio that suits their skill set and stay in their strategic swim lane the whole time. And it's very, very doable. And what I'm finding is as the market is maturing, even though it's still emerging, but there's definitely more demand for fractional now, it's easier to get fuller quicker. So that financial runway piece is not quite such a barrier as it was in the very early days. And I'm also seeing, I have to say, so this is just my observation, is I'm seeing the Generation Z individuals doing portfolio work, not fractional C-suite, because they probably haven't, you know, got to the point where they've got the skills and experience to do that. But I can see those individuals just looking around in the world. I see those individuals operating their employed roles and then doing side gigs, hustles, and building other roles on the side of their main role, or even just having a portfolio of roles, but not quite at the C-suite level. So I'm seeing that generation already adopting this way of living and working, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, and I think you also mentioned not only young mums, but also young dads.
Yes, I'm definitely seeing that. So what I'm seeing is young dads who don't want to be the perhaps the dads that they had, who were never at home. So they don't want to be the dad that is gone in the morning when their children wake up and doesn't come home for bath, tea and bed. And I'm also interestingly seeing second time dads. So it didn't work out first time. And that could be because of, you know, the amount of work they were putting into their corporate roles, which damages relationships at times if you're away from home a lot, et cetera, and the stresses and strains of that. And second time round, when they're having their families, they're determined to do it differently. And I'm seeing dads join this model for that very reason.
So this really speaks to the future of work and different generations having different requirements from work, which I find really interesting. And when you were asked at the beginning of this year to make a prediction about the future of work, one of the things you said is you're expecting to see a rise in fractional twins. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. So this is a concept where employed C-suite individuals, perhaps and most probably of larger organizations, so the corporate world. So those individuals are classically overworked. That's what I'm seeing. I mean, people join us from those organizations, you know, on the edge of burnout or not wanting to go through that again. And those individuals have got so much on their plate. I mean, the role of the CFO, just take that for example, has really progress from being a financial steward historically to a strategic innovator and thought partner. And the amount of roles and responsibility that those individuals have is just getting larger and larger. They have an endless to-do list. What that means is they can't get to everything. They have to prioritize, yet things still need to get done. So a fractional twin is where they can engage with another C-suite leader on a fractional model. So on a flexible fractional basis, perhaps for a project, intense, or even 1 or 2 days a week for a longer period of time. And these individuals, interestingly, don't want that group CFO's role. They've done that in the past. They've decided that's not for them now anymore. They've moved away. But they're non-threatening. They don't want that job. They just want to make that individual look really good. And they can pick up and do all the things that need to be done without so much oversight, because they've sat in that seat before and they know how to do it. So they can reliably get it done and they can bring it back done, and they're non-threatening. And it means that the group employed C-suite individual will very much focus on only the things that they can do that is really valuable for them in that role. And yet the business gets an agile talent strategy and makes sure that everything, you know, that needs to be accomplished is done.
You know, I really love that. And some of my audience are communicators, and I could really, really see this working for chief communications officers who are classically overworked, end up, getting too deep in the weeds and not having time to do the strategic stuff. And if they had a fractional twin who they could hand some of those projects over to, they could really focus on the strategic work.
Yes. And the beauty of it is, so just playing on the metaphor there, the fractional twin can be identical and bring more capacity. So get everything that I already can do, but just haven't got the time to do, get that done because it's extra bandwidth. Or they can actually be a non-identical twin and bring new capability to the table to do the things that I don't yet know how to do. I don't need to do them, but again, it still needs to get done.
Yeah, it's such a lovely concept. I'm looking forward to seeing that more and more in the market. So, Sara, in 2024, you were included in the E2E Female 100 track, which is an index recognizing the exceptional achievements of the 100 fastest growing female-led or founded businesses in the UK. Congrats on that recognition. That must Thanks. Have been very exciting. Was being an entrepreneur always part of your path?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, absolutely not. I never had that down as something I would do. But saying that, the entrepreneurial world was so much less developed when I was at the start of this career as a fractional leader. It's really boomed, actually, over the last sort of 20 years. And entrepreneurialism has really been embraced, particularly in the UK. And so it just wasn't on my radar back then. I came into this, I fell into this really through necessity. I needed to find a way to bring up my children and be at home for part of my week. Yet I also wanted to have a fulfilling career. And I just did not know how I was going to do that in a corporate environment. So this idea came up and off I went. Yet I also think that still happens today to particularly women. I feel that women are, you know, finding it difficult in the structural system that we're in to manage and accommodate childcare and other caregiving roles that they might have. So we have to innovate and then we become entrepreneurs.
You're so right. It happens all the time. And your business is enabling women to do just that. And as you say, men as well. So, Sara, you started out independent and fractional when you started this journey 25 plus years ago. You now run a large global organization. Could you talk a little bit about your leadership style?
Gosh, yes. What is my leadership style? I guess What's interesting is that we started this business without employees, actually. We started it, it's a self-employed business model. All our client-facing C-suite professionals are self-employed. Yet we don't believe you need to be employed to be highly committed and to act as a business and as one team and one brand. And those are the sort of myths and barriers that we aim to challenge. And because of that, I feel that my leadership style has always been one of leading from the front, I suppose, and inspiration and bringing people along with me as an invitation. So it's here we are. This is the challenge. This is the vision that we can see we can deliver. Who wants to come? Who wants to have a go? And really building on people's motivation, excitement about for those that have the same vision and values around that. So I guess that's my style in a way. I'm more of a leader from the front, not terribly focused on being a completer finisher, I have to say. And it's about the people. So for me, everything is about relationships and connection, building as much as I can deep connection, particularly with our team, and obviously our partners and the businesses that we work with, but particularly with our team, and ensuring we've got really trusting relationships. So I would focus on building connection and deep trusting relationships. And then once you've got that, you know, you can do most things, because if things get difficult, you can talk about it and work it out. And that's the main thing.
And is that what you describe as psychological ownership?
Yes, I guess it would be, which is what I've uncovered as the label, if you like, for holding together a business model, in my case, that isn't employed. But I have to say, we need psychological ownership within our relationships and within our job environments, whether we're employed or not. And it's about having a relationship that works commercially, having efficacy. It has to deliver value. We need to have an environment where we feel we belong and we're part of something, and it adds to our identity. It means something to us. It, after all, you know, we're very particular about our possessions, and, you know, a job, a role is like a possession of ours. So it needs to build us up and add to our identity. And then if you can have those three things in place, it's possible through building control and autonomy and job crafting, having a psychologically safe environment, which is that sort of trusting environment that I spoke about, with intimacy, where we actively do things together, that builds psychological ownership, which means that we're aligned. And it really matters to us that this is our job, our role, and we want to make it work.
So what I'm hearing you saying is that psychological safety comes first within your team because it's building the trust, and that out of that grows psychological ownership.
Yes, psychological safety is important, really important. It's really important that we hear those all voices, and people can be in an environment that they feel they can be heard and seen. I think that's really, really important. And what I'm learning more and more from research and the work I'm doing is those voices, whilst they sometimes might be the lone ones or the outlier, there's huge value there. And they're worth investigating. They're worth spending time with and playing with, because they can inform quite a lot.
I heard you use the word intimacy, and I know that has quite a special meaning for you and your business, in terms of how you build relationships as you open new offices in different countries. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So we do have intimate relationships with our people, and particularly our country leaders. Now, so these are individuals that are dotted around the world who are running our businesses in those countries, and We're aligned around a vision and values. Yet, you know, there's an awful lot of trust placed in each other around are we a good partnership? And sometimes when you're starting out, who knows whether that's going to work out? So what we decided to do, and we fell into this again, because we didn't have much money when we were going overseas in the early days, we didn't have the money to stay in hotels. So what we did when we met potential new country leaders and when we started businesses in new countries is we stayed at each other's houses. And what that meant was that we got to know the individual fully, or much more than you ever would glimpsing through a window of just a work connection. And we got to know the families, we got to know their outside interests, we really got to know the whole individual. And what we felt was really important is if we're trusting these individuals to build this business in another country, and they're trusting us to guide them and support them, we needed to have a relationship that was deep. And by spending time together in this way, we built those relationships, and it's really stood us in good stead. It means that we know each other intimately, obviously in the professional sense, and we've continued it. It is part of our fabric of our business now.
And that continues the role of trust, which you've talked about already, which is so lovely. You also talked about hearing different voices, and that leads me to my next topic, which is diversity. And I'm really interested to know what diversity means to you as an individual, but also as a leader.
Yes, I guess when I think of diversity, I guess it's the full spectrum. It's enabling all voices to count, and for our business to be inclusive. And that can be across many different parameters. So it's age, gender, the way we think, the way we look. I think it's really important to be as inclusive as we possibly can. And our business, interestingly, it's quite a male environment, finance. And, you know, yet we struggled a little bit to begin with, because obviously while I was one of the early adopters, it was generally males who were attracted to the model in the early stages. Yet actually it's really fabulous for females as well, and particularly individuals who've perhaps taken some time out of work to look after children. And yet we weren't reaching those people because we weren't looking as if we were welcoming to them. So, you know, we've worked really hard over the last few years to show that more diverse individuals and groupings are welcome within our business. And we've literally had to work at it by just showing that we do have those individuals here. And when people see people that look like them and sound like them, then we attract them. And we're really making great strides now. So I think, but it's an active strategy. What we were doing before just wasn't working, which is interesting.
So how do you build that level of inclusivity and also signal to people that you're welcoming to them?
Well, when we were looking to bring more females, particularly into our organization, we talked to the individuals who are female in our organization and said, okay, you know, tell us how you heard about us. Tell us where you hang out. Tell us how we might show up in places and in conversations that the individuals we're trying to attract might be. And so we listened, and we took on board, and we started activating those channels, talking in that language. So we actually did some research, and we found that our current language that we went to market with was quite male and was actually potentially turning off females. So we needed to change our language to be more welcoming. We started to share stories of individuals in our business who were of those minority groups to get them talking about how it was working for them. So putting some thought and effort into deliberate strategies and practices and thinking about how we show up and where we show up and what we say.
So what I'm hearing is intentionality about how you show up and then intentionality about how you communicate.
Yes.
which are both things I love and are both big themes for me in We Need New Leaders. Sara, you are a thought leader, you're a researcher, you've written two business books, you are out there doing podcasts and you're on stages talking about your research and about your business. How do you think about your own reputation?
I guess for me, it's about knowing myself. You know, I don't always get this right at all, but I think the more work I can do on myself so that I show up in a way that feels grounded and true to me, then I can trust myself to, you know, react in the right ways in environments which then almost the reputation sort of takes care of itself in that regard, because it is who I am. I'm genuinely representing myself in an authentic way.
And leading on from that, do you think about the different elements of your reputation? Do you think, oh, I need to write another blog, or I need to show up on social media? Are those things you think about in a concrete way?
I associate what you've just said there with brand, which to me is slightly different from reputation. Obviously, they're linked. I spend some time visioning how I want to be seen, how I want to be thought of, what I want to represent, and, you know, what do I need to do to achieve that? So what do I want to be? What do I need to do to achieve that? But be flexible every year. So I have some ideas, and then I'll sit down with the individuals that can help me achieve that, and we work out strategies. But I guess the thing is not to be too attached, because I don't want it to be so rigid. I'm quite prepared, because the access economy and my thought leadership piece is quite fluid. It's not set in stone. It hasn't yet happened. So I have to be listening to the market as well, and to be flexible and go with where that takes me. So there's an element of purpose to it, and there's an element of being opportunistic and open to new ideas as they come along.
I really love that idea of not being too attached to the outcome. I think that's incredibly healthy, because I think if one does get a little bit too attached, then there can be a sense of disappointment or a feeling of being let down. So I think it's incredibly healthy to combine purpose and then slight detachment from the outcome, and be prepared to be fluid.
Yeah, it does feel healthy. And I guess my purpose is to help others benefit from this way of living and working. And that can take many forms. So as long as I'm, you know, achieving that, as long as that feels fulfilling to me and to others, and I'm making a difference and having an impact there, then I'm quite flexible on, you know, how that manifests.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking back to when you talked about the different demographics that you're starting to see in the fractional and C-suite professional world. It makes me think that the work that you're doing is doing such a wonderful job at starting to deconstruct the old leadership archetypes. So a leader doesn't have to look like a specific set pattern, which I really love. And you know that this is my passion, is how do we change the old leadership archetypes and celebrate all types of leaders. So my question to you is, what can we do collectively and as individuals to change those archetypes and those old patterns that are so stuck in our brains?
Yes, I mean, I think we need to talk about it more. And I think we need to do the work on ourselves around who we are and how we want to show up, and build self-awareness for ourselves and have a good relationship with ourselves, which helps us have a good relationship with others. And, you know, I've been playing around a little bit with the idea of feminine and masculine energy. So, you know, I feel that everyone, it's not a gender discussion. This is an energy discussion, and we can all access the feminine and masculine in us. Yet I feel under pressure in to have more masculine energy, when actually more feminine energy would be appropriate. And I feel that there are a lot of people out there who default to the masculine, when in fact, if we can work with individuals so that they can access both, I think we're going to have a different leadership style, a different leader in the future. And we tend to label feminine and masculine a bit as good and bad, as hard and soft. And I don't think those labels help either. So I think more talk around how we can all access both of those types of energy and provide pathways and acceptability to behaving that in a masculine or feminine way that are both, can both be beneficial.
Yes, I always love it when we move away from any form of binary. And I think that the fluidity of different types of energy within one individual allows that individual to show up in different ways in different situations and allows them a more fluid response, which moves away from that very harsh and very constrained leadership archetype that we sometimes still see.
Absolutely.
So, Sarah, we're coming towards the end, and I have three standard questions that I always ask my guests. Could you give us a book recommendation?
I can. I was thinking about this, and am I allowed to do two?
Yes, absolutely.
So one is Frederic Laloux's Reinventing Organizations. So for your benefit, I'm showing you that now, but it's called Reinventing Organizations, and it's about organizations that are guided in a different way. So they have an evolving purpose, they celebrate wholeness in people, and they work through self-managed teams. And it showcases in that book a number of amazing organizations around the world who outperform their competitors in their class. And they're called a teal type of organization. So there's a bit of jargon to it. But there's some really great messages in leadership, distributed leadership, decentralization, and to giving control and power to the individuals in the organization. It's a great leveler. So I feel, we've dabbled a bit, with those concepts in our organization and had lots of conversations about it. I think, you don't have to go the whole way, but there's some great learnings in that book around leadership. The other one is one called Couples That Work, and it is by Jennifer Petroglieri. And it's a lovely book. It's a play on words because it's about how couples, individuals who are together in partnership, in relationship, personally, can then gain the benefit from how they balance and manage their careers professionally, and how contracting with each other over time enables them to support each other over time to do the things in their careers which really can mean something to each of them. And I think it's a really great book for individuals who are in relationship and with other family members to use to design their careers going forward.
Two wonderful recommendations. Thank you so much, Sarah. You know that my passion and purpose is to help emerging leaders land, keep, or create their dream leadership roles. And essentially, this podcast is the podcast I would have liked to have had when I was starting out in corporate. So, what three tips do you have for emerging leaders from diverse backgrounds or of diverse identities for achieving their leadership goals?
I would, for anyone, I think, wanting to achieve their leadership goals, I think we could all do with doing that inner work on ourselves and understanding who we are as individuals, gaining self-awareness, learning to regulate our emotions, to manage complexity, to have systemic thinking. I think these are all really great traits of leaders. And it takes courage. It takes a lot of work. It takes time. It takes coaching, guidance. So it's, you know, I guess not everyone can access that. Yet I still feel there are quite a few resources that are available to all of us to be able to, you know, in today's world, to access information on that and find, perhaps gravitate towards communities that are out there that support that type of work. And I think that that really helps us develop as good leaders. Having a real consciousness around acknowledging feelings at work is really important. Emotions matter, they're energy in motion. And talking, providing space to allow people in work environments to talk about their emotions and feelings have been hugely beneficial to our organization, because they are there. They're there all the time. And if we don't bring them to the surface and know about them, they're just going to get in the way. And they do get in the way. And it's, we tend to, I think sometimes we tend to focus on all the hard commercial stuff. Yet actually the really important stuff are the emotions and the relationships. We need to talk about it more. So creating space for that and safe places to have those conversations, I think are really important in work. And I think that will encourage leadership. If people are exposed to that in their work environments, that will encourage them to, as they become leaders, to bring that into their work environments. And then I guess lastly is something about comfort zones. My first reaction mostly to anything that I get asked to do at work is I can't do it. And then I think about it and have a go and my comfort zone expands, and I'm just so grateful that I did have a go. So I think being conscious of what our comfort zones are and, you know, dipping our toe outside to expand them all the time, giving encouragement for others to do that, I think is a really good thing to do.
Those are three absolutely wonderful tips. And I particularly love the one around emotions, because we're not robots. We're not showing up robotically at work. We're showing up as humans. And to acknowledge the emotion, as you say, then allows people to get on with the work once the hard conversations have been had.
Yeah.
Love that so much. So, Sara, my last question. We're living in difficult times. The world is not an easy place. What brings you joy?
Yeah, I being in my flow, and I get that in a number of ways. Work, thought leadership actually puts me in my flow. I really love thinking about this new way of living and working. I get so much energy from it and unpicking it. So, you know, challenging the norm, thinking differently, observing what's going on in the world, that all, if I can find the time and the space, that is where I'm in my flow. And then I guess the other place I'm in my flow is when I'm out riding on my horse in nature. That really does give me a lot of energy, and that brings me a lot of joy.
What a lovely place to end. Sara Dorr, thank you so much for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.